The only salvation for black people is to save themselves. The thing that they have, the physical chains, the physical bounds have been taken off of them, and now the chains are on their mind. And you have been, the society has programmed them to such an extent that they don't have any value.
This is Andromeda 21, a series of conversations, rap sessions, with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Culture Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. The purpose of these programs is to inform and inspire, to spread the realization that black is beautiful. The title of this program refers to the Ethiopian princess Andromeda, who, like us, was in chains, became free, and later took her place among the stars.
I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
Recently, a seminar was given on our campus, which was designed to explain in an atmosphere of compassion and love the black experience. The name of the group giving it is called the Institute for Achievement and Motivation from Chicago. My guests today are the two co-founders of that organization, Mr. Eddie Harris, who's a professor at Kennedy King College in Chicago and also director of programs for the Institute, and Mr. Raymond Brody, president of the Black Architects Association of Chicago, also a co-founder and director of research of the Institute for Achievement and Motivation. Mr. Harris, what is I Am?
Well, I Am is a motivational, the Institute of Motivation. And what it deals with is motivating people to get them goal-orientated, to help them achieve, to make them conscious of what they're doing with their times as it relates to their goals in life.
What kind of people are you talking about now?
I'm talking about, mainly we've been working with people from the inner city, but IMA can work successfully with any group of people.
Do you have any, like, primary target by inner city? You mean black people, or is that what you're getting at?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. There's, based upon the critical dropout rate in the inner city, we find that there are many of the young brothers and sisters that are being pushed out, and they, just because they have no value on themselves. And based upon the way the establishment is set up, so what we do is, first, we let them understand that they are valuable. Secondly, once they begin to get a secure feeling about themselves, we relate that to their heroes, their heroines, and the people that they admire, and we show them the relationship to their selves.
It sounds exciting. How did this get started, Ray?
Well, what happens is that we've both had experience in the inner city. I'm an architect. I went into the inner city to improve the physical conditions, but I soon found out that to just improve physical conditions that does not change the people that have to live in this environment, and that we have to get about the business of changing the mental and the social attitudes of people in the inner city before we can solve some of the problems. Now, just in trying to work with the physical, I ran into so many social problems. Problems, for instance, like you improve the physical condition thinking that maybe if you raise the lighting level, this will mean that students can study. If you provide a decent kitchen, then this means that there can be adequate meals fixed and things of this nature. But unless the social or the mental attitudes are changed, these are just physical things that people can't begin to take advantage of. So right away, I figure that the mental attitudes of people have to be changed. We have to take people, shake them, and wake them, and put them on the track so that they can become something for themselves and for society as a whole. And this is what we've set our program to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very interesting thing, Hank. Every new product that comes on the market has a advertising and merchandising campaign put behind it. I mean, suppose we're making, say, a detergent. All right, so what does the manufacturer do? First thing he does is he pretests the market. After he pretests the market, then he'll make up some point of purchase pieces and design a whole advertising campaign to show you why his detergent is the best. Now, people have never really been sold on themselves, and especially black people. Have you ever seen any, outside of an academic framework, have you ever seen anyone selling motivational attitudes?
I don't see much selling of it in the academic framework either, man.
Yes, well, you run into quite a bit of conflict in that area, because most people in this atmosphere have spent 15 or 20 years learning how to teach, and when you come talk from the point of motivating yourself, it represents a challenge. So I don't want to deal too much in that area right now.
Okay.
But you see what I'm saying? What I'm saying here is that part of the problems that exist in the inner city today are brought about by the circumstances and the way the establishment works. It has reduced people in the inner city to the point where they have no value on themselves. And so now what we've got to do, I feel part of the answer to the problem is to begin to sell people on themselves.
Why do you think so little of this is done? I assume very little of this is being done.
Well,
is that right? No?
Yes, I think that in the past, let's say if we were to go back into history and look at how the black came to this country, the black man wasn't invited to this country for social reasons. He was carried to this country for one purpose, and that was to pick cotton as an instrument of labor. Okay, now, when there was no longer a need for this labor, then there was no longer a need to make people want to do anything. I mean, there was no need for motivation because there was nothing that they could do with this motivation. So you motivate it. So you go to school, so what are you going to do? There's really nothing for you to do but to sit around and take it easy and be lazy because you're not going to do anything anyway. And this is the program set up by the establishment. There is no place in the establishment for you other than to sit around and stand around on the corner and do nothing and be on relief and vote the way the man wants you to vote. This is the establishment. So there's no need to motivate the blacks to be something within themselves. Now, there have been motivation programs for blacks, but they've always been geared, for instance, to buy a certain product and to get out and vote a certain way and to do this and to do that. Well, these were all ends for the establishment. The establishment never, after slavery, after the need for free labor, there was nothing else for the blacks to do but sit around. As far as the establishment is concerned.
Yeah, so what you're doing is like helping them to reprogram themselves, to change a lifestyle which could often be suicidal, I believe. So what's been the receptivity you've had to a desire to change a lifestyle that's like in their chromosomes?
All right, well, what happens here is, just as Ray Paul pointed out, the establishment really has no more need for a labor force, and that's what black people represented initially in the American scene. Secondly, then they moved to consumers. You see, after they got to the point where free labor was didn't make sense from the establishment point of view, they said, well, we'll let them buy our merchandise. You see, the technology came in. Now, technology has advanced to such a point where they don't really need us anymore. So now, the only salvation for black people is to save themselves. The thing that they have, the physical chains, the physical bounds have been taken off of them, and now the chains are on their mind. And the society has programmed them to such an extent that they don't have any value. You see, a manifestation of that In the gang wars, in the conflict in the streets, in the crime in the streets, and what are they talking? They're not talking about protecting people. They're talking about protecting property. So, and there you hear the question over and over again. Well, what do they want? They want a decent home. They want to feed their children. They want to live in with relative comfort. They want some of the goodies, the little trinkets that they see, those cars and houses with the lots. That's all they want. It's nothing, not any different than anybody else wants. But in the in this whole process over the 400 years, the communications has broken down based upon the weight of the establishment, the lifestyle that they've been forced in has stripped them of the establishment's values, and now the establishment, so what's wrong with them? I don't understand. Well, the reason they don't understand is because this is what has been forced on. Now, all we're saying here with IMA is that we began to put a value on the individual and to begin to show him his worth, and based upon that, he can achieve within the confines of the establishment.
Here's one important thing to add to that. We're talking about reprogramming. We're talking about black people that have been programmed as consumers. We consume. We don't produce. Okay, so we've been programmed to consume. Now we're beginning to talk about programming ourselves so that the black man decides, do I still want to remain a consumer? Do I want to be a producer? What are the advantages of being a producer? And once we present all of these facts and bits and pieces of information, then as a man, he can decide for himself, what is my program? Now, you asked a question earlier about what are the problems that we're faced with. We're talking about motivation.
Right. I'm saying I think cats who are on dope like dope, say, and you tell them you can get them off of
okay.
it. So then how do they react?
All right.
To it?
That's a very good point. The biggest problem that we have is that most people feel that they are what they want to be. See, so we come in and we talk about, well, look, man, we're going to motivate you and we're going to make something out of you. See, well, the cat says, well, I am what I want to be. I want to be standing on the corner. This is my thing. This is my bag, and I enjoy getting high. See, okay, so from that point, that's our biggest problem. He doesn't realize that this isn't really what he wants to be, but he's brainwashed himself, he's conditioned himself, and he's picked out this little corner that this is my corner and this is my thing. So our first problem is to get him to realize, no, you didn't plan this for yourself. You didn't set this up for yourself.
I guess in the process of having him realize this, you're called dirty names, I guess, sometimes.
Well, because right away, we're the closest thing for this person to strike at it, because we begin to talk about some things that are going to make him angry. See, mm-hmm. We say, well, you say that you're your own man, see, but you live in a cold water flat. Now, is that by choice? You know, okay, you went down to check out a job and they didn't give it to you. is that your choice or the man's? See, you got kicked out of high school at the age of 14. Was that by choice? You tell yourself, I quit school. But the book says that you were dropped out of school. Establishment turned you off. See, establishment has programmed you.
For failure.
Right, for failure, for death in the gutter or in the prison, see, so that you can't stand on the corner and say, I'm my own man, because the real man wears the blue helmet, and he's going to be by here in a couple of minutes to tell you to get off the corner.
It's an exciting relationship, like it goes, it seems, from hatred to love of you. Would that be true or not?
Well, what I am saying, Hank, is that...
I'm saying once they catch on, it seems
well,
that
no, it makes
they have to be indebted to you, and this may take a long time.
Yeah, but he's going to be angry right away, though, see, because
right.
You're telling him some facts that
right.
He doesn't want to hear because he's already told himself that he quit school. Mm-hmm. Now, you come along and tell him, make him tell himself that, well, I'm a liar. I really didn't quit school. They kicked me out, see.
Right.
And it's not true that I want to stand here on the corner. I would rather be making some bread somewhere, see, and that I would really want to be of some value to my family. If this cat standing on the corner gets run over by a car, nobody's going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
See, no one's going to cry, because he was of no value to anyone in the first place.
Yeah.
And this is the most important thing that we have to play with. One of the most important human values is that You have to be of some use to yourself and to someone else.
Yeah, I was trying to get at the point, namely, once you go through this painful initial step, they do in the end, I think, get to revere you. I believe a lot of the guys you've helped come by your house and call you up often, Eddie.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you find here, Hank, is this, that initially, just as you say, that you find some resistance to it, because here you are, you're telling a man that his whole existence is a lie. You see, because the mind is the greatest thing that a man has. Everything that we see around you at one time or another was a dream in a man's mind. Now, if man can create all of these things, we certainly should be able to control our own destinies, you see. And so all it means is that you have a man in order. The man standing on a corner is just like a man with a brand new automobile going down a busy street doing about 100 miles an hour because he's headed for disaster. There's no getting around it. Just by standing on that corner, the police, the law and order people, he's got to have money to survive. He just can't, he's not going to be able to stand there in peace. So if you just, the restricted travel patterns, the restricted lifestyle.
Could you give him an example of the restrictive life pattern? I understand that the travel pattern of some people on the west side of Chicago is unbelievable. Could you give me some figures
on
that?
All right, well, let's say this, that, well, what happened is that about the end of World War II, you had a shift in black people from about 72% of them prior to World War II lived in rural farming areas. And then you have a shift that reached its peak around 1945, and they came to the promised land looking for jobs and a better life, only to find that they were and when I say they, I mean myself included, and all blacks came into to industrial cities, 17 major markets across the country looking for jobs and a way in. They were the last hired and the first to be fired. But when he got here, he had two children. And so now those two children had children, and they went on for three sets of babies. You had three sets of babies, and they came to the marketplace with no skills to put to sell with, no earning skills. So what happens is a subculture developed. And based upon the subculture, that they had to do other things to survive, which the establishment frowns upon. And based upon the establishment frowning on them and the area that the people began to settle in, the black people began to settle in and be exploited based upon the shortage of housing and being jammed into a concentrated area, that a whole, well, if I've got five babies, I want to feed them. So now I'm not going to see my children go hungry. I'm going to do something to get some food.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get me a decent place to stay. And
I dig it. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned once that there are adult blacks on the west side of Chicago who've never been to the Loop.
That's right. I remember one young man in particular. We were going, if anybody's ever been in the barn, the Greyhound bus station in Chicago, they'll know that it's not a very elaborate place. But we were going to Loop to take care of some business at that particular time, and we were about a half an hour early. And we stopped to have a drink of beer. It was a hot day. And this young man was 22, and we were talking, and he was awed by the Greyhound bus station, and I just couldn't get over it. You know, I didn't say anything right away, but I saw him. There was some vinyl plastic stools or something we were sitting on, and he was real excited about it.
So wow.
When we got back, I asked him, I said, well, listen, tell me, how often do you come downtown? He said, well, I come down on Christmas and maybe on Easter. And now this sounds strange. It's a 22-year-old.
Yeah, that sounds something else.
And most people never get down.
And then the whole language out, he didn't know how to handle himself. He didn't know how to handle himself in the loop.
Uh-huh.
And it's just fantastic.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, I know you can deal with people from all walks of life.
Yes.
Let's talk specifically about college students. Now, you have contractual arrangements with universities.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you get a contract for a university to work with their black students. What do you do?
Do you want to deal with
yeah,
that?
Why don't I speak to that? Our program is a two-part program. The first part has to do with achievement orientation, where we try to bring the person to a level where he wants to be something. He's finally at a stage where he feels that, okay, I'm going to make something of my life. Here I am in school, so forth and so on. Now, to deal with the college student, we have the second part of our program has to do with how do you establish goals? What are goals? How do you go about achieving goals? And just a very simple example, if you ask the average person, black or white, what are his goals, you will get goals like, well, I want to be rich, or I want to be famous, or I want to be important. But see, these aren't really goals. I mean, these aren't realistic goals. When we talk about a goal, we have to be talking about something that's measurable, something that's realistic, something that's achievable. So then we say, okay, you want to be rich. Let's pin that down. How rich? What does rich mean? Or you want to be successful. Exactly what does success mean? I want to have $5,000 in 2 years. And this is realistic. We can measure it. I want to be the head program director of a certain given program. This is realistic. This is something that we can shoot for. Okay, first thing, we pin down the goal, a realistic, achievable, measurable goal.
I see, and that's how you got your name. Is it the Institute for Achievement and
Motivation?
Okay.
Now, we've pinpointed the goal. Now, we have to set up a program for achieving this goal, $50,000 in 10 years. How much is that going to be a year? How am I going to go about getting this money? What am I going to do to get this money? What are the different things that I can do? And of these different things, what would be the most advantageous? Well, for instance, I want to be the head of my firm in 2 years. What do I have to do? First, I have to be an assistant director. Mm-hmm. How do I get his job?
So see, I say specifically in regard to students, you're going to say, how can I get up in the morning and get to class or something?
Well,
like that.
Let's say that if the goal is a degree in art, okay, in order to achieve that goal, you have to have so many credits. You have to take so many courses. Okay, now, at the end of each semester, you mark off the courses that you've taken, and you can see how much closer you are to this goal. But we even get down deeper than that, Hank. We like to talk about what can I do day by day.
I believe Eddie devised a chart, like an hour chart. Could you explain how that works?
Well, it's very simple. As Raymond was saying, first we have to, before the charts, it comes a personal data history. And what it does now, normally when you ask the person to fill out a personal data form, they resent it because of the nature of the questions on it. But what we've tried to do here is we've got around that by we give them the personal data form and have them keep it. And the only reference that we make to the personal data form is that we have a blank one, and we tell them, give them a interviewer's perspective for as they would look at your personal data form. You see, the thing that a trained eye would see. Then we say, well, now I know that you came from a family of five children. There was one parent in the home, and she worked. Her earning capacity was $5,000. So right away, that begins to tell you something.
Mm. I was thinking specifically of that chart for the hours of the day
All right, well, the chart for the hours of the day, you know, a lot of us get up in the morning, and we kind of waste our time. Once you get all, you can look down on it. We have a chart broken down in a 24-hour day. And we start by charting from the time we get up to the time we go to bed. And then at the end of the day, you look at that chart and see just exactly what did you do with your time.
Now, aren't most people ashamed when they feel that out?
Well, certainly they're ashamed, because what they'll find is they've got big, I remember a blank space. I had this young student the other day, to give you an example. I was looking at his chart, and he had two classes that day. Now, you know that normally you study 6 hours for each course. And so now what he had done is he got up and went to his two classes, and the rest of the day he spent playing basketball and looking at the television. And I said, I won't call his name, but I said, well, listen, now when do you get around to studying? All right, now, based upon this kind of performance, I mean, are you achieving what you, did you come here to learn how to play basketball?
Beautiful, beautiful.
See, and this. Yes, and so this way, he never had stopped to think about what he was doing with his time, and that one day is just like building a brick. When you build a brick wall, you lay down one brick, and then you put the next one, and you go brick by brick, and when you know it, you got a 6-foot brick wall.
Yeah, and another exciting psychological reaction to this is you can live a certain way forever, mm-hmm. but when you see that in writing, it hits
you.
Yeah,
then you begin to realize.
Yeah, it could be mm-hmm. traumatic
That's
for
right.
you, I think. And I was at home in Memphis. I have a brother, 22. This is his. Mm-hmm. He gets, dig this, he goes to bed at 9 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
and he gets up at 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
That's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's hip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So at any rate, Ray, we were talking about what you do. So first, you make them realize the condition mm-hmm. they're in. And where do you go from there?
Well, again, like we've been talking now, we're talking about the main feature of our setup, and that is the program. You have to program yourself on a yearly basis, a monthly basis, a daily basis, and an hourly basis, to the point where you know what you have in mind to accomplish today. What am I going to get done today? And at the end of the day, you look back over the day and say, well, did I accomplish it? Why didn't I accomplish it? What can I do to accomplish it tomorrow? What mistakes did I make? How can I correct these? Now, it has to be understood that these goals and this program, it isn't a rigid program. The program isn't going to master us. We have to master the program. So if I set out a goal and halfway through my program, I see that my goal isn't as realistic as I thought it was, you know, from my past and from what I've been doing, I can set up a new goal.
Yeah.
See, but I know where I've come from because I've charted my path. See, I know where I came from, I know where I am, and I know where I want to go. Now, I can't change the past. I can't change what I did. I can't change where I came from. I can work with two things. I can work with where I am now and where I can go,
okay.
which is important. If I can chart the past, then I know where I am, where I'm going.
My guests today have been Mr. Eddie Harris and Mr. Raymond Brody, two co-founders of the Institute for Achievement and Motivation from Chicago. These were not members of the regular Afro-American Culture Lecture Series, but provided a special seminar which explained, in an atmosphere of compassion and love, the Black experience.
This has been Andromeda 21, another in the series of conversations with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Culture Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. Your host for this series is Hank Parker, instructor in the Department of Classics at the University of Illinois.
Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
Andromeda 21 was produced and directed by Louise Geislers for WILL, the radio service of the University of Illinois in Urbana.